Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management. Welcome back to our Mobility Management podcast. And today I'm really happy to be joined by John Dominic, the Vice President of Sales for Meritz USA. And John is going to be here to talk about power wheelchair drive wheel configurations, also known as front, mid, and rear wheel drive. We'll be talking about their similarities, differences, strengths, and weaknesses, and we'll also be catching up with what Meritz USA has been up to lately, namely its launch of the Axel and Axel Narrow front-wheel drive power chairs. So my thanks to Meritz USA for sponsoring our conversation. And with me today is John Dominic, the Vice President of Sales at Meritz Health Products. John has been in complex rehab technology for nearly 30 years, serving in sales, sales training and development, and in CRT clinical education and training. He's currently a board member of NCART, and John previously served as a board member and board vice chairman of the Athletes with Disabilities Network. John, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Lori. Certainly an opportunity. Thank you so very much, and look forward to our conversation.
Well, as I mentioned, we're going to be discussing power chair drive wheel configurations, which is such an exciting topic because it's an evolving topic. Once upon a time, not that long ago, front wheel, mid wheel, rear wheel drive were really quite distinct in how they felt when they were being driven. They each had very distinct strengths and weaknesses to go along with that. But in recent years, engineers have done such amazing work in studying those weaknesses and addressing them via design. So we've had, and we're still experiencing, an evolution in which different drive wheel configurations, how they perform, how they perform differently than maybe they did in the past, and if there still are differences as far as performance, ride, etc. So we're going to get to that in a few minutes, but I wanted to start off by asking John what Meritz has been up to. And I think that's a really significant question given where our conversation will be going. So John, can you start us off by briefly catching us up on what Meritz has been working on?
Sure, Lori. We've been pretty busy at Meritz, and really in the past year or so, we've successfully launched a number of new and innovative power mobility products that really have filled some product gaps in that rehab technology space that really our customers have been asking for and that I think have been pretty well received in the marketplace. So, for example, we launched the Ultra 3A. That's a Group 2 single power KO835 coated power chair base. We launched the 3A basically to give us more capabilities in that particular code set. And this was really in a direct response to the new power seat elevation coating that CMS launched and became effective in the spring of 2024. So, for instance, we've always offered a power tilt system on the Ultra. We've always offered a power articulating foot platform. And we've always offered the power seat elevator. But previously, we've limited your choices to just two of those actuators. So, really, I had to kind of give up something to get something else. And we didn't think that was really the best, especially now that power seat elevation is being covered and funded. So we kind of went back to the drawing board, and really it was just more of a function of the electronics and the programming aspect of how those powered seat functions work within the chair. And the result really is the 3A. So on that KO835 Group 2 single power base, we can now offer power tilt, power articulating foot platform, and a power seat elevation, really to not limit either consumer or clinical choices by having to give one thing up to get another. So we're really pleased about that. It's been well received in the marketplace. A lot of our customers call that sort of a solution maker because it really fits that bill well in that particular code set. Also on the Ultra, we launched the KO836. It's a captain seat tilt. Just sort of a niche type of a product wherein somebody qualifies for tilt, but they may not necessarily have an active pressure wound. So they may not qualify for a pressure relieving cushion. So that captain seat tilt allows them to have that positioning and the pressure relieving capabilities of a power tilt, but not necessarily have to worry about trying to get a particular type of cushion funded where the captain seat fits that bill there. So I think we're really proud of our R&D team to be able to respond to the needs of our customers. So those are just two examples. I think one more is, you know, along with power seat elevation with the new Group 2 coverage, that's now, you know, a specific code set of KO830, KO831. We've had a number of chairs or power chairs in that code. We actually went and took our Vision Sport, which is our kind of flagship Group 2 product. It did offer seat elevation, but it wasn't coded in that code set. So we went back to PDAC and got that recoded in K-Weight 3.0, K-Weight 3.1. So we really have four platforms now in that code, and along with our Ultra line, at least in that Group 2 category, has been a really good lineup for us.
Okay, great. Thank you for that context, because now we're going to use that to build on my next question, because let's talk about Merit's new XL and XL Narrow, both of which are front-wheel drive power chairs. So how did the XL chairs come about, and what situations or power wheelchair rider concerns, I guess, does the XL line seek to address? And for example, why are there two versions? Why are there the XL and the XL Narrow?
Well, Lori, you know, continuing that innovation journey, we introduced the XL and then most recently the XL Narrow and that Group 3 power wheelchair code. What's really notable about that is really the R&D that went behind it to take into account not only the performance characteristics, but also the clinical efficacy, right, of what clinically that particular consumer might need given their particular diagnosis, given their particular positioning needs, as well as, you know, assistive technology professionals, ATPs, and consumers. We really took all of their input on, you know, what are some of those things that are important to you in terms of, you know, I live in Detroit, so automotive, we talk about fit and finish, right? What are some of those things that from a fit and finish that really make it a very functional, clinically efficacious power mobility device? So we kind of took all those things into account in designing the XL. We chose a front wheel drive platform for this particular model, primarily, and we'll talk about this, I know, in a little bit more in detail, from a stability standpoint, right? It's a very stable base, gives you some really good maneuverability characteristics. So the XL was really our first foray into that modality. And the XL Narrow came about really to allow us to provide a more compact front-wheel drive base. You know, a number of years ago, with mid-wheel drives, you know, a number of manufacturers launched their narrow version of mid-wheel drives just for a smaller footprint of the base that still gives you all of the maneuverability that's really important for transportation, for tight home environments, those types of things. Whether it's manufactured homes, old housing stock, where it might have fairly narrow doorways versus the standards that we see in new construction today. So that narrow design really allows us to provide that stability, but also narrow that base to give consumers more access to more places within their particular home environment. So, and then really the last thing with the XL, both the XL and the XL Narrow, really has to do with what we call serviceability. So all of those things up front for the consumer, for the ATP, for the clinical efficacy, but you know, somebody has to service that chair. Somebody has to set up that chair during the evaluation process, right? We want to try to dial in the seating functions and the seating parameters for that individual when they're trialing the chair, so they have a really good positive experience, so they really understand what this particular platform can offer them. So we also took the design phase and we tried to make it as easy as possible to set up, service, adjust that chair, because as I know you've covered in a previous podcast with the service and repair idea, if you will, that, you know, a lot of our provider customers struggle, right? It's a cost center for them. And to be able to offer them more efficiencies, whether it's, you know, setting up a chair for evaluation, setting up a chair, getting ready for delivery, doing the final fit upon delivery, and then adjustments as an individual changes over time, right? These are 5-year useful devices, and it needs to match the performance parameters and the characteristics of the individual consumer, not only today, but next year, 2 years, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. So we wanted to make that process as easy and efficient, not only for the consumer, but also for our provider customers.
So John, here's where I'd like to bring drive wheel configuration into our conversation. Historically, what have been the different strengths and weaknesses for front, mid, and rear wheel drive? Because, for example, I've always heard that front wheel drive is great for climbing obstacles because the chair is pulling from the front. But at the same time, historically, front wheel drive has also been known for fishtailing at the back of the chair. So what are sort of the strengths and weaknesses for the different types of configurations?
Great question, Lori. So there's three configurations primarily. Rear wheel drive, which has really been sort of the standard from the outset of powered mobility. Mid-wheel drives became more popular in the early, late 90s, I guess, and through the 2000s, primarily coming from the consumer power wheelchair market. And then, you know, front wheel drive has sort of been out there as well. So front, rear, mid, each have their own strengths. Each have sort of what I call sort of liabilities, if you will. So let's kind of start with what's traditionally been the power wheelchair configuration. That's a rear wheel drive, right? Rear wheel drives are very stable bases. They're very comfortable. They're intuitive to drive. They do fairly well with, you know, and it's a very stable base, right? So if I'm adding things like a power tilt, power recline, vent trays on sort of these complex rehab applications, I need a very stable base to not only support the client, but also support the other powered seating functions that are associated with that device. Rear wheel drive tends to handle the highest speeds. It's pretty decent, moderate performance over obstacles. You know, when I'm coming down an obstacle because I have front casters, right, those front casters will tend to drop down. So I do get a little bit of lurching forward in those drive configurations. And the other thing is sort of your lower extremity access, right? Most rear wheel drive chairs, they have a front caster on both the left and the right side. I may not be able to get 90 degree foot positioning because I have to account for that caster swing in a 360 degree rotation when I'm turning left, right, doing a 180, doing a 360, those types of things. And for the most part, rear wheel drives have, you know, pretty good shock absorption. But from an accessibility standpoint, rear wheel drives tend to be to have the largest, longest wheelbase, if you will, and also it's the largest turning radius. So I kind of liken a rear wheel drive to sort of the placard that you see on the back of a semi-trailer. It says, you know, caution, wide right turns, right? That's because on a rear wheel drive platform, I have to sweep on the outside of a turn if I'm going from a hallway to another hallway to be able to clear the rear drive wheels and the rear frame on the inside of that turn. So I have to kind of sweep out, right? So sometimes access can be an issue, especially if I'm, as I said before, adding, you know, vent trays, I mean, some other things that sort of add to my wheelbase length, right? So the longer my wheelbase, the longer my turning radius. And I know traditionally I've been in this business for a little while, and you know, we've had some clients that, because there weren't other alternatives, they may not have been able to access other rooms in their home because they just didn't have the ability to maneuver that sort of long wheelbase there. So that's kind of the rear wheel drive scenario. We'll go segue here to mid-wheel drives. Mid-wheel drives are very intuitive to drive, right? So I kind of turn on my own axis like I would when I'm walking, so it becomes very intuitive to drive. It is the smallest overall turning radius because my drive wheels are in the center of gravity or the center of that chair, so I can really do a nice 360. So typically on mid-wheel drives, if I can clear the front, I'll clear the back. So that's kind of a nice helpful hint. Very compact footprint. I can get 90 degree foot positioning and those because of the way the design of the front and the front casters. And a lot of them can handle, you know, pretty decent obstacles. The only downside is when we talk about handling obstacles is there's really only two ways to make transitions over obstacles or over incline transitions. One is speed and one is power. So in some cases, I need to have the power of the drive wheels help me get over those obstacles, especially if I'm a switch driver and I'm driving at slower speeds. I really need that power. And in certain situations, speed is not going to be my friend. So if I have to come into my front door, go over a maybe a one and a half inch threshold, and I have a closet in front of me and the stairs to the left to go upstairs. And I either have to make a right-hand turn to go into the kitchen or a left-hand turn to go into a living room. When I'm coming into my home, speed is not my friend there. So I really can't use momentum to get me over there. Otherwise, I might put a hole in my closet door. So that's where you really want the power of the drive wheels. Mid-wheel drives work really well there. A lot of the mid-wheel drive configurations, including those from Meritz, have, you know, independent suspension for each of the articulating beams in the front and the rear. But one of the downsides of mid-wheel drives is that you want to be able to dial that chair in for your various environments. So while I can increase or decrease the tension on those front suspensions, as I increase that suspension, then those become more rigid. So trying to get over an obstacle at a slow speed, I might, if they're too rigid, when that front caster or casters hit that obstacle, it may lift that drive wheel up a little bit, and you get what's called kind of high wheeling or high freewheeling, if you will, that they don't, the power of the drive wheels isn't, the weight of the drive wheels can't transfer the power to the surface. So as a result, you might sort of sit there and spin. Whereas I might then, you know, need a little bit more momentum to be able to help me over that, because I really can't access the full power of the drive wheel. That's also very common when we get into sort of grassy environments, softer environments where I'm pushing those front casters and I'm pulling those rear trailing casters. And if I don't really have good, I get a lot of resistance in that case. So maybe that configuration wouldn't be the best, where maybe a front wheel or a rear wheel might be a better performing configuration in that sense. And then when we get to front wheel drive, right? So front wheel drive, big drive wheels are in the front. That's where your power is. They are very good being able to get over obstacles. It has a smaller inside turning radius than a rear wheel drive, right? It's just the opposite of a rear wheel drive. I need to turn on the inside of corners on a front wheel drive. I turn on the outside of corners on a rear wheel drive. So that may very well play into how easily can I access certain environments in my home. I can get 90 degree foot positioning in a front wheel drive because I really don't have any casters out in front of me. I just typically have sort of a front anti-tipper, if you will. And it's a very compact configuration for seating. You know, one of the downsides of front wheel drive is, as you said before, with that sort of fishtailing. So the way that the power chair operates with the drive wheels in the front at higher speeds, you can get sort of that fishtailing effect in the rear of the chair, or when I'm making a left or right hand turn at a higher speed, that back end tends to want to swing around. I like to kind of paint stories with pictures. I don't know if everybody ever saw the movie Robots, where the robots go out into the end of the world, try to find their way, and they overnight at this woman's house, and they're all inside, and she sort of has this sort of large caboose, right? And so when she walks around her house and she's knocking pots and pans and things over, that's a very similar application to front wheel drive, is because I'm in the front of the chair, I have to be careful because I have a lot more of the platform behind me. So I need to make sure I can clear the rear of the chair versus just the front of the chair. So those are some of the pros and cons of each. It really is an individual preference. What's the most stable base given the diagnosis for the patient? What type of power seatings can it function? What is my environment, right? We all know Medicare has the in-home restriction for what somebody qualifies for powered mobility. But as we all know, people aren't confined to their homes. They have to get out in the community. They want to live their life. They want to experience life. So we need to take those environmental factors into consideration, as well as transportation, right? Do they have a wheelchair accessible van? Do they use public transportation? Do they have wheelchair ride share, right? What type of access do I have getting in and out of those things, right? A rear wheel drive is very difficult to do a 360-degree rotation inside of a modified van, right? I mean, they're fairly large. Mid-wheel drive might be a better option. Certainly front-wheel drive is helpful there as well. So all of those factors come into play. We're offering two of those three at the moment. We've got the front wheel drive and rear wheel drive configurations. But it really is just an individual preference based on what works for you, what's best for you, what's easier for you to maneuver and to operate, and your home environment.
Okay. I love that. I'm going to have to see that movie, Robots. I always think of front wheel drive as kind of when people are boarding an airplane and it's a narrow aisle and they have a huge backpack on as their carry-on that they're normally not used to wearing. And they forget that so much is in the back and they turn and wipe people out on both sides as they're turning because they forget that they have this stuff, you know, this backpack in back. So I know the Axel and Axel Narrow are both front wheel drive chairs, but I drove the Axel Narrow at MedTrade in March. Took it, you know, down aisles, did a lot of spinning, and the way it drove and turned felt to me more like a mid-wheel drive chair feels. It did not feel like I had a lot behind me. It felt like the turns were pretty compact, I guess. So number one, why is that? Because I'm curious how you achieve that. And then number two, how are those sorts of capabilities helpful to your consumers?
Well, two things there, Lori. One is just sort of the design configuration. I think the Axel is a 39-inch wheelbase, right? I've seen rear-wheel drives that are 47, whatever. So how you're sitting in the chair makes all the difference in the world. So while you're sitting in a front-wheel drive chair, the drive wheels are in front of you, right? Versus a mid-wheel drive chair where the drive wheels tend to be in line with how you're sitting in the seat. How do we talk about this from a technological standpoint? Both the platform design, where the drive wheels sit in relation to the seat, as well as really programming parameters, right? So we've done an awful lot of research in terms of being able to dial in the performance parameters so it operates very smoothly and very efficiently to be able to kind of give you that sort of mid-wheel drive feel, right? So whether you're turning on the inside, whether you're turning on the outside, the electronics and how we've set up the programming parameters really play a big role in how smooth that operates. So while it isn't a mid-wheel drive, it sort of feels like a mid-wheel drive. You don't feel that swing on the back. The other part of that is really the suspension system that's built into the Axel and the Axel Narrow. You know, we use an oil dampened suspension that really gives you the ability to take out a lot of those everyday bumps and jolts and things that you would get out in the community, whether it's uneven sidewalks, whether it's gravel, making incline transitions. You really don't feel that sort of jolt. So those are all things that were sort of built into the design. And I think the Axel Narrow, because of its 2 inches more narrow than the big brother Axel, if you will, at 22 and a half inches now, really makes that mid-wheel drive feel because it's a much more compact base, right? So one of the other downsides of a front-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive is that when I'm making turns, certain individuals with certain diagnoses, your head moves through space more so, right? So we were trying to sort of come up with that sweet spot on where the drive wheels are relative to your center of gravity. So it's not so extreme forward. So you get more of that intuitive drive feel versus other scenarios where when I'm making a turn, sort of my head's moving through space as I'm going through those turns. So all of those really, really played into how we design the chair and how it performs as a result of that design.
John, Meritz has a robust lineup of power wheelchairs in complex rehab as well as the consumer power categories, but the Axel family has the ability to accept powered seating, right? Complex powered seating as well, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so you are able to accommodate people, the Axel line would be able to accommodate people who need tilt, recline, seat elevation.
Yes. Okay. Four actuator functions. So we have power tilt, power recline, power seat elevator, power articulating foot platform, or power elevating leg rest. So those are your actuator options on the Excel and the Excel Nero, yes.
Okay, great. My last question is kind of a shout out to repair techs, the technicians, because I think there are unsung heroes a lot of times. They're the ones who are having to drive out to clients' homes, wherever those homes may be, and they're under a lot of pressure to quickly diagnose problems with power chairs and quickly get them fixed. So you talked a little bit prior at the start of our conversation about how you wanted to design chairs that also kept the ATPs and the service techs in mind. So can you go through maybe an example or two of how Meritz included that repair aspect when you were designing the Axel family of power chairs?
Sure. So as I'd mentioned earlier, in the design of the Excel, and these design parameters are certainly top of mind as we move forward with other products, is not only the clinical efficacy, but also the serviceability and the setup. So we offer a seating system called Frequency on the Excel. Number one is the Frequency is unique in the sense that if I need to grow the width or the depth of the chair, in most power-based platforms, unless you order something specific, when I grow the width of the seat, I'm also growing the width of the back, right? Those two go hand in hand. We design Frequency to have those two things be independent of one another. So I can grow my seat width, leaving my back width the same. So depending on the different postural needs of the individual, every individual's body shape is unique. So we can actually do endomorphic and mesomorphic seating configurations without doing anything special with the Frequency seating. So as, again, a five-year useful life product, you know, I may grow more in the hips, and so I need to grow my width on the seating system, but yet I'm fine with my upper trunk, right? So I don't need to do that. I won't need to make any special modifications to be able to accommodate a seat width growth versus a back width growth. And then the same thing with the mesomorphic configurations. I may be more narrow in the hips and more broad in the shoulder, right? More of that male postural configuration versus a female postural configuration. So that's been very important for us, I think, well received in the marketplace. So it gives them a lot of flexibility. From a serviceability and setup standpoint, we've tried to do some very cool things to be able to help our providers out. Number one, when and where we can, we're trying to have common fasteners. So for instance, to be able to use a 4-millimeter hex key or a 4-millimeter T-handle wrench to be able to make most of the adjustments that you need on the fly, whether that's your leg length on your foot platform, whether it's the headrest on your chair, whether it's the fasteners to be able to grow my width, grow my depth. If we can use a common fastener for that, we're trying to do that as much as possible versus this one being 4, this fastener is a 6, this one's an 8, right? And I've got all these tools laying out that I don't know which one's which. So, and then from a functional standpoint, very easy things like, you know, you think about serviceable parts over time, wheels, casters, batteries. The Excel and the Excel Nero have a toolless rear battery access door. So it's been problematic in certain configurations that I would have to transfer the patient out of the chair to be able to get access just to change the batteries, right? And that can be very problematic. I may not have a caregiver available. I may be out in the community for whatever reason, and I don't have the mechanism or the means to transfer. So we're giving you the ability to be able to change and swap batteries in and out fairly quickly with a toolless access. Things like motors, being able to remove the shroud quickly and easily to be able to change wheels, to be able to get access to the drivetrain. You know, there's 3 fasteners. We're using automotive clips that are very common in the automotive industry for those types of things. Same thing with the electronics, right? The cable routing, right? We've got a channel under the arms to be able to route cables. So A, they're hidden, and B, they're not exposed and potentially get hung up on something as I'm moving about in the community. And then just where the electronics are placed, the modules and the control modules and the power modules, whether for seating or for the drivetrain, we put them underneath the seat to be able to give you really good, easy access to that. So when I do have a repair or I do have to make modifications to the chair, we can do that quickly, easily, and efficiently. And we want to be able to save our providers money because that is a cost center for them in most cases.
Yeah, that's great. Just the fact that you don't have to necessarily have a patient lift and a caregiver to get that person out of the chair just to pull the batteries, that's got to be a huge win for our technicians.
Yeah, and it's toolless, right? You can do it with your thumb and forefinger to be able to pull the battery box down and be able to get access to the batteries. So
little things sometimes that save so much time and sanity.
Yeah, and then, you know, the last one there, Lori, is when we talk about evaluations and setup, right? So if I'm in a clinic with a patient, with a supplier, with a clinician, I don't necessarily know what width, depth, back height, seat to floor height, leg length that they have if we're trying to eval or demonstrate a chair. So being able to, with a client or in the chair, we can make a lot of these adjustments while the patient's in the chair to be able to, as I said earlier, really put them in that optimal position where they have full function, where they're comfortable. And we can do that quickly, easily. So, you know, it's not like, okay, well, here, let me go take a half hour, make all these adjustments, and I'll come right back and we'll do the track, right? In most cases, we can do these types of adjustments and final fit adjustments very quickly, very easily, in just a matter of a couple of minutes, which makes all the difference in a clinic.
Well, thank you so much, John. I love this conversation. And thank you so much for coming to talk to me today. And also my thanks to Merits USA for sponsoring our conversation. So with that, we'll wrap things up with John. John, thanks for being with me.
Lori, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. But the best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes is to subscribe. And you can also go to our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thanks very much for spending some time with us today. We'll be back again soon.